Tony wants to hear from you. Call now at 347-308-8392. That's 347-308-8392, and let your voice be heard.
And welcome back, everybody. 32 minutes after the hour, and I've got to tell you that I've been looking forward to this segment for well over a week now. And I don't want to get too heavily into my personal story. I've discussed this on the air before, although it's been quite a while. When I was in elementary school, I was bullied by a classmate, bullied to the point where it affected my health. It created great trauma in my family. I had both my mother and father taking me to doctors because I was afraid to admit that I was bullied. It did severely impact me, but I also believe it helped to develop the man that I am today, and I'll explain that at some other time. It was to my great surprise that when I opened the Detroit News website back on November 5th, there was a op-ed that was titled, "Too Many Michigan Kids Are Bullied," and I, of course, read that with great interest. Joining me now to the author of the piece, Michelle Corey. Michelle is the Vice President for Programs for Michigan Children. You're going to find them on all of our social media as our featured website today at michiganschildren.org. And Michelle, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us this morning.
I'm thrilled to be here, Tony. Thanks for having us.
Well, obviously, I have a personal interest in this. I'm going to say up front, Michelle, that I hope this is the beginning of many discussions that you and I will together confront in a very real way bullying school. But let me ask why you felt this was the time to write this amazingly poignant and truthful op-ed in the Detroit News, which I found both comforting and a little scary, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with you. Michigan's Children was asked to partner on a press release several weeks ago related to some research, some new research that some folks we knew at Wayne State University had done with some new surveys of young people around the state where they were really trying to pull out yet again, as you say, this has been an issue for a long time, yet again, some information about the status of bullying in our schools in the state. And the reason they chose this timeline was just because almost five years ago, we had some additional legislation passed about mandating school systems to have anti-bullying efforts and bullying assessments and some other things. So we ramped this conversation up a little bit about 5 years ago, and the researchers at Wayne wanted to sort of see, so where are we now with it? Unfortunately, as you know, what they found was that bullying is still quite pervasive in school. More than half of the kids that were surveyed reported that they had witnessed bullying, and about a quarter reported that they had been bullied themselves. And so from Michigan's Children's perspective, as a statewide independent voice for kids and their families and public policy, we really were struck by, you know, we had some public policy gains, but clearly we haven't had enough, and we need to continue to push on this discussion, and felt like this was a bit of an opportunity to do that with some new research and some new attention.
Oh, it's critically important, and we, unfortunately, Michelle, from a legislative perspective, and we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But as you are well aware, and I think that it's important a little bit about Michigan's Children and the organization that you so proudly work with, so that people have just a foundational understanding of the purpose and the goals of Michigan's Children and the fine work they've been doing for a few years now.
Sure. So Michigan's Children is a statewide independent advocacy organization. So our main purpose is to assess and improve public policy for kids and families and communities around the state. We work with lawmakers, with business leaders, with community advocates to try to build better public policy that really works in the best interest of kids. And a lot of focus that we have has to do with reducing disparities in outcomes. So we look at what evidenced practice actually assists kids who face significant challenges. And we also believe that better public policy is made when people who are directly impacted by it are engaged with decision makers as well. So I would just go back to the example of the press conference that was held. You know, we facilitated a couple of young women to come to that as well, girls still in high school, to talk specifically about their experiences. And as you so eloquently discuss your own as well, it's always very helpful to have people who are directly impacted involved. We have a cradle to career agenda, so we look at kids and families from the very beginning to youth transitioning out of high school, getting into post-secondary, sort of a variety of issues, and try to take advantage of opportunities that arise with the state legislature and issues that are of interest to them. And also to really try to assess what are big concerns and how can we add value to those discussions.
Well, let me read from your op-ed that I mentioned. You write, not tolerating bullying means that we need to address the needs of the people who are the victims of that behavior. It also means that we need to address the needs of the people who are doing the bullying, preferably before that behavior escalates into something that is harming others. We know that many students who face traumatic experiences in their lives, the fear of being bullied and harassed among them, as well as those who exhibit harmful behaviors toward others, are focused on survival and not focused on their educational achievement. Yet the solutions are not hidden to us. And this goes back to something that I discussed with your communications director, Terry, last week. When there's a problem, Michelle Corey, that's solvable and we're not solving it, we do need to ask why.
I completely agree. We do a lot of conversation around the office and with our colleagues and partners about what tends to end up being kind of a disconnect between what we know to be true, what we know that will work, and what we choose to invest in and move forward. So one of the things that I think is very it's an issue with this issue particularly, is that there are some real great anti-bullying efforts, some assessment efforts, some intervention efforts. Most of those efforts are philanthropically funded. Some of them are locally funded. A few pilot kinds of programs are federally funded, but we really haven't taken a real look as a state at, you know, if we do indeed understand that signs of aggressive behavior start very early, like everything else. And as you had mentioned that I said in the op-ed, that behavior can be born of trauma or stress. There are unmet mental health needs. And we do have, there's quite a bit of evidence about what types of programs are working, what types of programs are helpful. But it's really at this point to move beyond awareness, to have some political will to build some investment in helping school systems and communities and families actually impact and implement some of those things that we know to work. Excuse me.
Yes, it's that time of year for all of us as we...
Sorry.
Oh, no, Michelle, I completely understand.
So, I think that what we're really calling for, and I think that, again, as I said, this is, it's not a new issue, but it's giving us another opportunity to really say, okay, we actually haven't solved this issue by what we've done so far, and clearly we need to move beyond that and build a little bit of a different conversation. And that, of course, is complicated by some of the recent, I don't want to go into this, but, you know, we just passed a road funding package that is destined to take state resources from other programs. And so you know, we're not quite moving in the way that we need to about really building rational investment in some of the things that we really need to do, like bullying prevention, like intervention for kids who have experienced the trauma of bullying, like really seriously providing integrated student services in schools so that teachers have have better ways of reacting and dealing with these situations.
Well, Michelle, as I said in my opening, I'm hoping that this will be, for you and I, the first of many conversations. This is so multi-layered, and you have, of course, already set out an agenda that, again, would take much more than the time we have left to get to. But let's, for a moment, I'm going to, again, have to just refer to my personal experience because it's what I know best. And it's severely impacted. This happened over the course of 2 years for me, Michelle. And you can imagine that in the third and fourth grade, which are terribly important developmental years academically, I suffered greatly as a result of this bullying, which was, by the way, done very quietly. Although it was not done in secret, the bullier was very good at what he was doing, even at that age. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did. I missed a great deal of school. Certainly my focus was not on math and reading and other subjects that are critical to a child's development at that point, because I was concerned whether I was going to actually reach school with my lunch money or that I would even get there at all. The threats that were made against me were horrifying, and I tried everything not to tell someone that what was going on. The point of my saying all this, Michelle, is that there, to me as a kid, there was no recourse. I didn't feel like I could trust anybody, and I don't know if that is as true today. I don't know if bullying is discussed in the classroom. And maybe there's good news in that regard, but again, we have to go back to a solution-based process in order to get this resolved once and for all. But let me go to my comment about not being able to focus academically. It's hard enough to get a third or fourth grader to do that to begin with, but then to layer on top of that something as horrific as bullying, you know, it really puts a kid behind.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the pieces that the researchers pulled out, and I can't quite speak to the level of detail that they could, but they did in the report that was released look at even what were the costs to schools in just what you're talking about, in lost attendance, in sometimes grade retention, in disciplinary practices. So there are enormous costs to personally and societally. The two young women that were at the press conference that talked just as eloquently about considering suicide and serious consequences for not being able to recognize and acknowledge the behavior that's going on. It does appear that bullying is discussed much more now, that part of what has happened has been a great level of awareness. But the point is that simply sort of telling young people not to bully and raising awareness within the youth population is not enough. Have we done enough that professionals in schools and out of schools can recognize symptoms better, that parents can recognize where support could be had? And a huge issue that you just brought up is trusting behavior and kids needing to have a grown-up in the education setting that they would trust with such a painful, horrible circumstance. And many, many kids don't have that. There's lots of mobility in schools that we've lost. Lots of school social workers, school counselors just don't have a role of support for students particularly. We just have to think a little bit more about how do we utilize out-of-school time programs, after-school programs, where kids maybe are building a little bit different kind of trusting relationship with the adults that they are with. They need to have that close relationship with someone to be able to share what's happening. And then the systems need to be able to quickly and appropriately respond. And just as you said, I keep harping on this, but respond to the young person who's being bullied, certainly, but also respond earlier for the kid who's exhibiting aggressive behavior that oftentimes, you know, starts coming up when they're still in preschool. And we, you know, there are certainly interventions that could happen. The one thing I would be remiss not to say is that part of the national research around kind of what works for bullying programs, and you brought this up a little bit, Tony, too, is that programs that involve the parents of the kids with the kids are much more effective than programs that the schools are trying to do sort of external to the family. Because as you have said, these are concerns and crises and impacts on family structures as well. And to think that interventions can happen without really addressing that is also problematic. But again, like you say, that it's deep and it's wide, and that makes it a little bit deeper and wider in the conversation too.
Absolutely. I want to remind everybody, my guest is Michelle Corey. She is the Vice President for Programs for Michigan's Children. You're going to find them online at michiganschildren.org. And again, we are featuring that website and all of our social media for the program this morning. So simply, folks, just go to Facebook or Twitter, and you will easily find the link to their website. Michelle, let me first say that when I did finally come clean and addressed what was happening to me at the school and with my parents, and this was in the early 1970s, everybody responded fantastically. So I want to make sure I say that up front. We should talk about early intervention. I will tell you that the gentleman that bullied me ended up, and to this day will serve the rest of his life in jail for murder. I have to wonder if early intervention would have made a profound difference in his life. Forget about me for a moment here. I do think about him. I do think about the pain that he has suffered as a young kid. There's a reason why bullies are bullies. It's not just because at 10 or 12 years old or younger, you feel some sense of empowerment. There's a reason these things happen.
That's exactly right. And I think that there's we really need to dig into that a little bit more with young people. I think that, and I understand it, there's somewhat of a knee-jerk reaction to aggressive behavior in schools, and we've had all of this zero-tolerance legislation, and we just want to suspend and expel these kids, even at an early age, in kindergarten, first grade. A lot of times because we don't have the sort of resources and wherewithal to really try to dig into what are really the underlying causes of this. Was there trauma that was experienced, you know, early on? There's lots of the new brain science research about the adverse childhood experiences and trauma, and it's another space where when you are young and things are happening that create instability and all those things in your lives, your brain is actually wired differently, and you respond to circumstances differently, and it needs to be addressed in different ways than we're able to address it now. Michigan had, I think I had brought that up in the op-ed piece too. You know, we had a really interesting program that was put in place for trying to figure out aggressive behavior in preschool kids. And it was sort of this wraparound program where mental health specialists, when you had young children, 3-year-olds, 2-year-olds, 4-year-olds, exhibiting aggressive behavior that was beyond the norm, we would have a bit of a wraparound space there, and parents would be involved, and it could better dig out if there were things that were going on in the home, in the neighborhood, and how those child care providers were responding to behaviors that might exacerbate the problem. It was called the Child Care Expulsion Project. So, again, this idea of these solutions, and they had great evidence, great outcomes from that program of kids not then having disciplinary issues once they got to K-12. So, I mean, we have a lot of evidence for some of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me, Michelle Corey, again, read from your op-ed in the Detroit News of November 5th. Researchers surveyed attitudes of adolescents from across the state and found half said bullying is a problem in their school, with 1 in 4 saying they experienced it themselves. The report provides dramatic evidence that state legislative efforts adopted in 2011 requiring districts to implement model anti-bullying policies and practices didn't go far enough. Current requirements, reporting initiatives, and public awareness efforts are great first steps, but you continue, committing to the application and resource support for solutions that have and will work is what needs to come next. So I ask you the obvious question. What does need to come next, and what's the reality that it's going to happen when we have stark evidence, research staring us in the face that says what we're doing is not working?
So I think several things need to come next. We were glad that that the State Board of Education President John Austin has also been involved with us in this conversation, and so he has been talking a little bit about some efforts to put some additional teeth back into the anti-bullying legislation, meaning that we just need to do a little bit better assessment. We need to look a little bit more at different groups of kids, who it is that's actually being bullied, and trying to make sure that schools are better reporting bullying themselves so that we can better assess sort of where resources need to be placed. There do need to be, we've been active with legislators around trying to build some better supports for integrated student services in schools. There are different models for that, and there's some state-level investment in a program called Pathways to Potential, which has brought some social workers back into the schools in some places. But those things are not broadly available throughout the state. They're not consistently available. And the bottom line is it's going to take some resources to make that happen. We have had flat funding in the state for years of around building school-based health centers, which have been another avenue for behavioral health assistance and some other supportive assistance. And again, they're not everywhere. They're in some places and not in others. So I think that I would say step one would be to increase investment in what we are already investing in, but at more of a minimal level than we should be, to try to create a bit more consistency throughout the state for having some support services easily accessible to kids and families, either directly in the school or really well connected to the school system. And, you know, there, as we had mentioned before, there are, again, lots and lots of spaces. As I said, I would suggest that we relook at some of these supports in preschool settings to really be able to pull out and pull through some additional resources In those settings, teachers and administrators need better training and awareness and skill building in trauma-informed practice. There is a lot going on in the state of Michigan right now around trauma, but most of it is connected to the child welfare system, the foster care system, the juvenile justice system, where of course it needs to be, but it also needs to be better connected to the traditional K-12, to really dig into, again, using what we know to better serve kids and families in our state.
Well, Michelle, unfortunately, we are just about out of time. I got to tell you, I'm sitting here just shaking my head no through that entire conversation that you just gave, because everything comes down to money. Everything comes down to an ongoing attack on public education. Everything comes down to really ignoring the reality of what we have in front of us. And as I've said, when you have a problem that's solvable and you don't solve it, somebody needs to be held culpable for that. And that's a conversation for another time. Michelle, I will tell you definitively that I am committed to doing whatever I can, whatever this show can do. And I don't just mean during the program. If you need to engage me in some other way to help with this, what I believe is a critically, foundationally important problem that desperately needs to be solved, I am committed to helping you do that in any way that I can, and you are always welcome on the program. I have been placed on your mailing list. I will start following the work that you're doing through MichiganChildren.org, and I just can't thank you enough for your vision, your courage, and your really not just your willingness, but certainly the urgency you're putting to this issue of bullying in the schools. And I'm so happy that we had a chance to connect this morning.
And we will be connecting all the time. So thank you for the opportunity as well.
Well, I appreciate that. Have an amazing day. Thank you for this wonderful conversation, and we'll talk again soon.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
All right. Michelle Corey, once again, for Programs for Michigan's Children. Wow, I don't even know where to begin. Unfortunately, we need to take a break for the top of the hour. But folks, this is not an issue I'm going to let go of. I, again, experienced it. I will share that story at some point. But for now, I'm Tony Trupiano. The voice of the people continues after this.